All right, our first story, we're going to kick things off by talking about Dr. Mahathir and how he's against nuclear power.
So this is an, it's a new headline because yes. He said something new, but it isn't exactly a new story in the context of Malaysia and nuclear power. So the reason why we are not for the use of nuclear power apparently is because science has not been able to provide a safe way to dispose of the radioactive waste generated. Prime Minister Tun Dr. Mahathir Mohamad has said that although nuclear plants are a cheap alternative to fossil fuels for producing electricity, they're still not safe.
Yeah, so here is a snippet of what Tun M said at the conference of the Electric Power Supply Industry 2018.
When I'm still around doing something, there are two things people don't do. Number one, they don't smoke near me. Number two, they don't generate electricity through nuclear power. I'm against nuclear power because we had a very bad experience. What we learned from that is that the waste from irradiated material is not easy to dispose. Although science have made tremendous advances in the field of electricity, but science has not been able to deal with the waste material after it ceases to be a source of power.
Right, that past experience that Dr. M was talking about was related to tin and amang, or tin tailings, which has heavy metals. They were both used to produce colour televisions, but it was eventually discovered that there were ways to produce colour TVs without tin and amang. And what then happened, we were left with all of this amang residue that was actually radioactive.
Which the government had to find measures to, you know, make sure that that residue would not go on to cause harm. It was then buried in a 1 kilometre square area under thick cement to contain the threat of radiation leak, which then, of course, means that that area of land is just kind of wasted, right?
That's right, yeah. He also said there had been numerous incidents related to nuclear use worldwide. Chernobyl, of course, Ukraine, the latest thing in Fukushima after their natural disaster, which has led to people suffering from radiation poisoning.
So for the time being, Malaysia is going to continue to rely on fuel sources to generate electricity, such as fossil fuels, coal, hydroelectric dams and wind power, which Tun M said were stable and environmentally friendly. How do you feel about this?
Everything except coal.
Hydroelectric
and wind power,
yeah, all
fine.
Yes.
But coal and East Malaysia have also lots of history, so let's not even go to coal.
I think as we're proceeding to move forward, and when I say we, I mean the world, you know, to look for sources of clean energy. I'm not saying that we need to dive headfirst into the mire that is nuclear energy, because that, of course, has a lot of repercussions. But looking for more alternative sources of clean energy can't be a bad thing.
So one of the, I for one am for nuclear energy, but one of the, I guess, interesting counters to, against the last government's proposals were that, Malaysia is so mired in corruption and bad management that do you really trust this with a nuclear power plant, given that the world's most organized people, the Japanese, have run into issues? What more with us, right?
I think it's sad because that's a comment about management but not about scientific knowledge or talent. And, you know, it's unfortunate if there is the knowledge here, and I believe there is, to do it right, but not necessarily the faith in people to contain or to manage the waste.
But also, you know, when it comes to nuclear power, I don't know how many physicists and nuclear experts, people who studied the subject, are left in Malaysia. They're probably all working overseas because there are no jobs for them here, really.
And because as long as Tun Mahathir is around, apparently it's not going to happen. No smoking.
No smoking. And no nuclear power plants.
That is right. Now, on to our next story. You've probably seen it all over the internet. Supermarket strawberries in Australia are being tainted with sewing needles.
It would break a berry grower's heart. Tons of perfectly good strawberries being dumped because of a heartless scare campaign. What started in Queensland has spread nationwide. Needles and similar sharp metals have been found in fruit now in every state. Hundreds of workers have been laid off as some growers cut their losses. At stake is a $500 million industry and our export reputation.
That was a report from Network 10 Australia's Hugh Remington. Soon after the strawberry panic began, sewing needles have also been found in an apple and a banana.
Just a solitary apple and the solitary banana.
So yeah. I don't know if those are just copycat crimes, right?
Yeah.
Australia's Prime Minister Scott Morrison. Yes, they've got a new prime minister. I'm losing track as to who they are and how long they've actually served for. He has said that this act is comparable to terrorism. Now, he also demands tougher sentencing in response to the nationwide scare. And he's calling on Parliament for an actual change in the law to raise the maximum sentence for deliberate food contamination from 10 to 15 years behind bars.
Just heading into question time. I know many Australians are very concerned about what's been happening with the strawberries and what some idiot has done in disrupting and damaging an entire industry and making parents worried all around the country. Today I announced that we're putting in some tough new laws, not just to increase the penalties for people who do this already, but for those who go on YouTube or think it's a big lark to go on and stick pins in fruit. It's not funny, it's not right. It's causing real distress and harm in our community, and it's got to stop. So we're going to be passing laws within the next 24 hours to send a very clear message. Don't do it.
That was Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison. At least 20 pieces of fruit have been found to contain these needles. The scare has prompted a series of supermarket recalls, and some stores in New Zealand have temporarily banned the sale of Australian strawberries.
Yeah.
Farmers have been forced to pulp fruit and lay off their pickers because of slow sales.
This is an absolute travesty. I mean, the strawberries, man, they're like happy fruit.
Yeah. And just the idea that somebody would do something like this, I mean, it's just potentially so incredibly dangerous to just stick sharp objects in fruit. What are you doing?
It's cruel.
Yes, it is. People feed their children strawberries, you know? It's just, I don't know. Anyway.
So this of course, isn't the first time we've actually seen such a scare involving tampering of consumables. Back in 1982, there was the Chicago Tylenol murders. Paracetamols were laced with potassium cyanide, which is, of course, a deadly poison. And here's a report from ABC's Max Robinson about that incident.
Here in Chicago, what started as a series of mysterious, unrelated deaths 48 hours ago has resulted in the biggest drug warning in U.S. history. It all began Wednesday morning when 12-year-old Mary Kellerman died. Within 12 hours, there were 5 people dead in suburban Chicago. A 6th would die later, all victims of extra-strength Tylenol capsules laced with cyanide. Within 24 hours, almost 4.7 million capsules were ordered recalled by the manufacturer, McNeil Company, a division of Johnson & Johnson, from stores in 37 states. And by noon today in Washington, the Food and Drug Administration warned consumers nationwide not to take any extra-strength Tylenol products.
So 7 people died after consuming the tainted pills. No suspect was ever charged or convicted of the poisonings. And, I mean, that, again, it speaks to a level of cruelty and malice that I can't really comprehend, the idea that you would hurt people, random people in this way.
Complete strangers. I suppose that is the very definition of acts of terror, right?
Yes.
That it strikes out, its victims are nameless and faceless. They don't care as long as they make a point.
And what is that point?
That's the question, right?
So when it comes to Australia, with its reliance on... there's so many farmers, and there's so many farmers who would have been relying on this for their income. I don't know what the point is. What are you trying to say?
Back to the Australian Prime Minister. I mean, he had an interesting proposition. He said to Australians, just go back to buying strawberries like you used to and take the precautions that you should. Make a pav this weekend and put strawberries in it, mate.
I don't know about that.
Sorry, I tried.
In case you missed it, what he said was, make a pavlova this weekend and stick some strawberries in it.
Hey, that's a direct quote.
I know, but okay. Uma's Australian accent might have clouded the message there.
Needs a
just
lot
a bit.
Of work, mate.
Anyway, authorities have also suggested for strawberries to be cut up before they're eaten. They've yet to find suspects, and they've asked the public for help with their investigation.
All right, after this, we're going to be talking about global weirding. Both Lynn and I learned that phrase today, and we're going to tell you all about it. BFM 89.9.
Building fashion movements. BFM 89.9.
Lynn and Uma with you on the evening edition on this incredibly gloomy evening. We're going to cheer you up, though, with a story about global weirding.
The world's strongest storm this year left a trail of destruction. There were surging waves, flash floods, and violent gusts of wind. Nearly twice as strong as Hurricane Florence at its peak, the powerful typhoon Mangkhut continued its deadly path on Sunday and Monday, hitting Hong Kong, Macau, and mainland China, after leaving dozens dead in the Philippines. And for some, repairing could take months. In northern Philippines, rescue teams are searching for dozens still missing, many trapped when a landslide buried their houses in a gold mining town. Authorities expect the death toll to keep rising.
That is right. On a day where the weather is marvelous and, you know, really treating us right, we are choosing to talk about more weather. As that clip indicates, headlines have been dominated by two huge weather events over the last week, one here in Asia, Typhoon Mangkhut, and another in the United States, Hurricane Florence. And while it might seem like having this overlap of one massive Atlantic hurricane and one massive Pacific typhoon is normal, it's actually deeply unusual for the two areas to be active at the same time. Since 1970, such an anomaly has arisen just twice before, in 1998 and then 2016.
Yes, so this has led to atmospheric research scientists Philip Klotzbach dubbing these two dual attacks a symptom of global weirding.
New word.
That's right. Now, the term was actually coined by Hunter Lovins, who's the co-founder of the Rocky Mountain Institute, referring to how the rise in average global temperature is leading to all manner of crazy things, ranging from heat spells and droughts to cold spells, violent storms, intense flooding, forest fires. You get the picture.
And true enough, I mean, this summer has seen Japan sweat under a sweltering heat wave.
Yeah.
Flash floods and landslides have hit Vietnam. A drought-induced plague of rats. I shouldn't laugh. That's
no,
terrible.
No, it is.
Swarmed over Inner Mongolia, while warming oceans have led to coral bleaching and an increase in the intensity and unpredictability of storms, as we're seeing.
Yeah, so now there's no denying that the true victims of such events, of course, are the inhabitants of the affected areas, humans and animals. But in terms of an industry that's been deeply impacted, tourism is both a victim of and contributor to our planet's ecological decline.
Pack your bags and check in. Cleared for takeoff, and then wait for touchdown. Flying's no longer a luxury pursuit. It is the only realistic way to travel long distances. The price has tumbled, but air travel still comes at an environmental cost. 5 million barrels of oil are burned every day in the skies above us.
Each person uses about 1 ton of oil equivalent energy per year. Now, for example, to fly a full 747 from Heathrow to New York and back will burn about 300 kilos of fuel per passenger. Now, that is 1/3 of the total energy used by the average person in a whole year.
The figures are breathtaking. The most frequent flyers don't give it a thought.
Flying is an elite activity. It's something which rich people do, and the effects of it will affect everybody, rich and poor.
So for travellers, weirding can actually result in any number of outcomes, cancelled flights to destinations, dropping off the bucket list altogether, as atmospheric conditions and rising sea levels render them unviable. Yeah, so there was a paper published in the Nature Climate Change this year, and it examined the environmental impact of tourism from flights to the manufacture of cheap souvenirs, and the results are actually quite damning. The industry accounts for a not inconsiderable 8% of global greenhouse gas emissions, which is quite a lot.
So some people have said that this term, global weirding, is just kind of a softball way of saying global warming or climate change. I mean, it's catastrophic climate change is what it is, but we call it global weirding and it's kind of a cool term, but I don't know, do you think that it maybe softens things a bit for people who don't like hearing about, you know, climate change as such?
I don't know if it softens things. I think it can be a little confusing, if only because we don't necessarily associate the word weird with climate change. Meanwhile, global warming, climate change, ozone depletion, all of these terms have kind of entered the popular vocabulary, if you will, when it comes to discussing these issues. And this one just sounds like the world is getting a little weirder.
Do you care about, not about climate change, but when you think about traveling, do these things enter your head? I mean, I think about terrorism personally. I don't always think about natural disasters, but it does cross my mind when I'm buying plane tickets.
Yeah, I think about climate change and I think about the impact that every single flight has.
Mm.
And then I realized that I don't have a choice. Like, if I want to take a boat?
Well, no. I mean, some people have suggested other ways of offsetting it, right? Like for every flight you take, you plant a certain amount of trees or,
like a
you know,
1,000 trees.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot. It's a lot. But there are small things that you can do. Or maybe you take shorter flights, I suppose.
Shorter flights. But I mean, if you have to go long distance, if you're traveling for work, if you're traveling for pleasure, if you're going to the United States, how many 1,000 trees do you have to plant for every trip?
I know. Or you can do a throwback and, you know, write letters on a ship as you putt slowly across the oceans.
Well, I don't know. I don't think it'll be long before we start, as human beings, as individuals, start having to trade in carbon credits or watch our carbon footprint. Right now, nations and corporations are doing it, right? But how long before we, as human beings, end up doing that? That's going to be something to watch.
I'm really excited to hear from people about whether or not does it factor in to your travel plans? Does climate change matter to you? Let us know. That number is 018-789-8899.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.